Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Randall White. Our big conversation this morning is about gratitude in a year that seems to be filled with nothing but negatives. There is gratitude in there somewhere, and we'll check into it in just a little bit. But first, a quick discussion about the state of California politics. And let's face it, the optics are not good. We're talking about Governor Gavin Newsom's recent appearance at a birthday party for one of his lobbyist friends at Yountville's famed French Laundry restaurant. First, we just heard about the dinner. And then on Tuesday, a TV station in San Diego published photos of the governor with his wife, the first partner, and several others having dinner in a room the governor says was outside, or at least had doors that were opened to the outside. Either way, the governor acknowledged attending the party was a mistake and that it contradicts with what he's been preaching about social distancing and mixing with groups of people during the COVID pandemic. This is what he had to say on Monday.
I made a bad mistake. Instead of sitting down, I should have stood up and walked back, got in my car, and drove back to my house. Instead, I chose to sit there with my wife and a number of other couples that were outside the household. And you can quibble about the guidelines, et cetera, but the spirit of what I'm preaching all the time was contradicted, and I got to own that. And so I want to apologize to you because I need to preach and practice, not just preach.
And speaking of optics, aside from the governor's credibility issues, we have a handful of California legislators in Hawaii right now for a conference in the middle of a worsening pandemic. It's been reported both Democrats and Republicans are there, again, flying in the face of all of the health precautions. Lots to discuss with all of this, and that's why we've asked John Myers, Sacramento Bureau Chief with the LA Times, to join us. And great to have you on Insight, John. I really appreciate your work.
Thank you very much, Randall. Good morning.
Yeah, so yesterday you tweeted out, sometimes a picture really is worth a thousand words in regards to the photos of Governor Newsom's dinner at the French Laundry that showed him dining with a group of friends, which included a top medical industry lobbyist. How bad of a PR blunder is this for the governor?
It's probably dangerous for someone who writes for a newspaper to say that the photo is worth a thousand words because we'd like you to read the thousand
right?
words. But yeah, I think it's, I mean, the photo symbolized really the parsing, I think, that the governor had in his explanation of what had happened. And it just continued to fuel the conversation. And look, I think it's a pretty obvious PR blunder. I think it's probably a pretty large one. And it is absolutely magnified by the pandemic, by the restrictions that everyone else is being told to apply to their own lives. But I want to point out, at least with both of these cases, there's also an air, I think, of privilege. The French Laundry is a very expensive restaurant in Yountville. Full disclosure, I've never been. It looks it's awfully pricey from all the menu items I have seen. The resort that the legislators are visiting in Hawaii, in part, some of them on the dime of the business groups that have funded for that conference, is a pretty pricey place to go. And I think those two elements together, the restrictions that we are living under and the sense of privilege, really makes this a very toxic conversation for these elected officials. And we all know in life in general in these days that perception becomes reality. But in politics, it is that times a thousand. And symbolism matters. And these folks ask us to trust them to lead. And there are a lot of people who feel like, why should I trust you after the actions you have taken part in over the course of the last several days?
Mm. Yeah, John, I always thought I wanted to go to the French Laundry. And then I read in your piece that the average meal price at the restaurant is $325. So that decimal is in the wrong place for my budget. Newsom, however, does say he and his wife paid for their own meals.
Yes, he does.
Does that make a difference?
You know, I leave it to the court of public opinion, but I will make note of this. It's interesting that the governor realized that it would be a bad optic for someone to see the fact that his meal was paid for ultimately, but he didn't realize it might be a bad optic that he was going to the dinner in general. And you know, one other thing we should point out is that while the guests at the dinner were all friends of a Sacramento lobbyist, a man named Jason Kenney, who has been very close to the governor for the better part of two decades, and continues to serve as an informal advisor to the governor. They represented other people who have business in front of this administration, most notably the California Medical Association. The chief executive officer and another top official of the California Medical Association, which represents doctors, which of course we could get to, were sitting at that table with the governor. They have business in front of this administration. And so I don't find a way you can slice this that doesn't feel like it's an unforced error for this governor in the middle of this pandemic. He has received a lot of rave reviews in some corners for the way he has communicated to his constituents, but this is a decidedly different experience when it looks like he has a whole different life that Californians don't know about.
Yeah, you've covered a lot of scandals. You heard the governor's apology just a moment ago. Is that enough to restore the public's confidence? Do you think the public will ultimately forgive him?
Well, at least one of the folks I spoke to for one of the pieces we wrote, piece that I wrote in the paper the other day, believes that, and I think it's a time-honored tradition that the public likes to see people in elected office admit they were wrong and apologize for their actions. Mm-hmm. And that may be very well true here. I mean, the pandemic kind of complicates this because we don't really know how people react. And to bring it back to policy for a moment, Randall, the governor is fighting multiple fronts here of his ability to do his job. He has local officials in some counties across California believing that his metrics for how counties should shut down services are unfair and are dictatorial. I mean, if you believe the Republican talking point out of this. So he's fighting with local officials in some places about his ability to lead. He's probably going to fight with the legislature in some ways when they return in a matter of weeks about his power in the executive branch versus the legislative branch. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's a fatal blow to him? No, I don't. But I do think it feeds into a narrative about his power. And then for a governor who is independently pretty wealthy and has lived a pretty exclusive life in Marin County before he moved to a pretty exclusive enclave in Fair Oaks, again, it feeds into that narrative as well. So I think how the governor handles it over the next couple of weeks is going to be pretty interesting.
John, let's talk a bit about this apparently bipartisan event in Hawaii. It's an annual event?
It is an annual event, and our newspaper and others have written it pretty much every year about who attends. We often don't know who the people are that fund it. We know some of them, tobacco companies, pharmaceutical companies. And we often play this game of which lawmaker goes, but it certainly feels magnified in this pandemic era of travel restrictions to get on a plane and fly that far for this event that doesn't feel essential.
Yeah, the timing is just, once again, it's the optics and the timing, right? Was it necessary? Did they have to take this trip right now?
Well, I mean, people are going to disagree on that. I would certainly say that the whole world seems to operate on Zoom conference calls at this point. And I do Zoom events with people and they're Zoom conferences. And so, there are some questions about, do you need to be in person in this? The organizers of this event have told us that they have taken health and safety precautions. They pointed out that they follow the guidelines of the Hawaiian Islands as to people who travel there. But again, this comes the same week that the state is telling people, limit your non-essential travel, be careful, think about what you're doing. And, these lawmakers are there. And boy, the optics of that one, too. You're on a Hawaiian island and you're there with your family. And you may be actually having it subsidized by interest groups who have business at the Capitol. So it doesn't feel essential. And I think, the other part to this, Randall, is we still don't know all the people who have attended this. I mean, unlike the governor who has said, hey, I made a mistake, I shouldn't have done that. These lawmakers are generally defending their attendance or even refusing to say that they're there. We had one lawmaker who we believe is there. It's pretty much, because we don't have confirmation, who we believe we had the right cell phone number for, hang up as soon as my reporter called and tried to identify what was going on. I mean, clearly knowing that this person didn't, apparently didn't want to have to disclose who it was. That's the kind of universe we live in when we're talking about this particular event.
You responded last night to a tweet by John Fleischman with the Flash Report, who says, I think legislators who participated in the Maui nonprofit Lobbyist junket Tripp should pen op-eds in their district papers about the trip, what they learned, and why it was good that they went. And you followed up and said, yeah, maybe also the names of those who they met with and the topics discussed.
Yeah, transparency obviously is something we care about in the news business. And knowing who the donors are, trying to understand what business they have in front of the Capitol, knowing whether they are asking you to introduce legislation next year, knowing whether or not they've offered you draft language of legislation for the state next year. These are the kind of things that you wonder about what happens behind closed doors. You wonder that in Sacramento all the time, in places pre-pandemic where, you know, there were private events and things, but you got to wonder it on a Hawaii conference at this particular point.
I guess we know that there's, you know, money and influence in California politics in the background that we don't hear about every day. But this week, we just really got a huge dose of it right in front of us.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, some people will listen to this whole conversation, Randall, and they'll be reminded of the famous scene in Casablanca, you know, where they say, I'm shocked there's gambling in this establishment. And of course, no one was shocked. And people will say, well, you know, this is how politics operates. And I get that. But I do think it's important to hold these elected officials to account and to explain what they're doing and to try to kind of understand how they view their role for their constituents and how they view the idea of being a role model or a public figure who has to lead by example.
So let's turn to Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, her Senate seat. Governor Newsom does get to pick who he wants, but tell us about the one Sacramento area Republican who is asking for clarity on whether Newsom should be calling for an election instead of making an appointment.
Yeah, I mean, the governor has his hands full with a lot of things right now. And one political element to that, as we know, is figuring out what will happen to that U.S. Senate seat. I think every single Democrat in California has probably messaged him in some way and said, hey, take a look at me, shoved a resume under the door. There are two questions here. One is ultimately, what criteria does the governor use to pick someone? And the second one, which was raised by Assemblyman Kevin Kiley, Republican from Placer County, is whether or not the governor has the power to unilaterally appoint someone or whether he should call a special election. And I'm not a lawyer, so I want to be really careful in trying to kind of parse through this. I mean, governors have appointed senators to fill vacancies in the past. I mean, the last time in California in the 1990s, former Governor Pete Wilson, under similar circumstances of appointing someone to fill the remainder of a term. And so Kamala Harris has 2 years left on her term. The courts would ultimately have to decide that. Clearly, if you're a Republican, you would like to see this go to a special election where you might have a chance to put somebody on the ballot and, you know, have voters take a look at your own conversation here. I don't know whether that goes anywhere, but I do think it gets to this point that this is a big decision by the governor, both for what the state wants in the U.S. Senate and also what the governor thinks about the priorities are in terms of diversity, in terms of diversity of thought and diversity of background. And this is a interesting time. It's kind of a parlor game in California politics, but it's going to be impactful on everyone in a matter of weeks.
John, is there a world in which Newsom could pick himself?
Technically, he could. Governors in other parts of the United States have picked themselves before. I don't see that happening for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is I think this governor realizes that his political legacy is tied right now to how he handles this pandemic in California. Mm-hmm. And it would be high up in his biography that he walked away from the job. So I don't see that happening. But boy, if you listen to the parlor game about who could be in and who could be out, it has been a wild ride. I ultimately think he chooses someone who's a statewide elected official. I think if you look at a handful of those by background, certainly he has a lot of pressure to appoint a Latino, the first Latino from California to the U.S. Senate, but he's got a few weeks to go. I mean, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden are still counting votes in other parts of the country, but we're going to certainly be watching. It'll be interesting to see.
Padilla and Becerra are front runners?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Alex Padilla, California Secretary of State, Javier Becerra, California Attorney General, both considered to be on that list. We published a list of names that included Barbara Lee, Congresswoman from Oakland, Karen Bass, Congresswoman from Los Angeles, both Black women. That would send a very powerful message that that the Black community would like to see someone representing their community in the Senate. And then another one who's maybe a lot of Sacramentans have not heard of, but was mentioned many times in the reporting we did initially, and that's Robert Garcia, who is the mayor of Long Beach, who would both be a Latino in the U.S. Senate and an openly gay LGBT member of the U.S. Senate, and is a real up-and-comer in Democratic politics. Again, only Gavin Newsom knows, and we will we'll kind of keep poking and watching this one as the next few weeks play out here.
I'll follow your Twitter feed closely, as I always do. John Myers, Sacramento Bureau Chief for the LA Times. In just a few seconds, John, before you go, the rest of our show is all about gratitude. Can you share one thing you're grateful for in 2020 of all years?
I think I'm grateful to be employed. Yeah. I mean, I think I would just be really frank about that. It's a tough time for the news business in general. It's a tough time for Californians everywhere. I am grateful to have employers who allow me to work around my life with my children, and who continue to believe in the value of bringing information to Californians as a public service. Yeah, so I am thankful to have a job, and I think all of us should be thankful for that because so many people are struggling right now.
I love it, John. Thank you again. Sacramento Bureau Chief for the LA Times. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. We're back with a lot of gratitude coming up in just a moment. I'm Randall White.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White, and our focus for the rest of the hour is gratitude. We came up with this concept because a week from today, of course, is Thanksgiving, and for some families, it's typical to go around the table and share what you're thankful for. Of course, this year, many families won't be together, and some may be missing a loved one who should be there but isn't because of COVID-19 or some other sad event in 2020. When you think about it, the scenario really sums up the year thus far with an overriding feeling of isolation amidst impending doom. So we thought, surely there are still moments to be thankful for in a period filled with pandemic, wildfires, choking smoke, of course, the record-breaking heat and social unrest. Oh yeah, and one of the most unusual and divisive presidential elections in history. Among the Insight staff, we could think of some personal and professional bright spots within 2020, but we really wanted to hear from you. So we reached out to you on social media and all week on Insight asking, how have you found gratitude in this year of all years? Take a listen to one of the responses we got. This is from Melody White, who lives in Oakland.
I'm just really grateful that despite everything, we're healthy, we're happy. And the life goes on, you know? Like, we all feel really isolated. We all feel sad and hurt, and different people's situations are worse and different people's situations are better, but in the end, we're all hurting. But I'm grateful that my daughter doesn't know that that's happening. I'm grateful that she's growing up surrounded by love and doesn't realize that this is just a total cluster cuss of a year.
Cluster cuss. I like that. I'm going to have to start using that. And then we heard from Lisa Abolt, who reached out to us from Yuba City. She offers her perspective on how she managed 2020 so far.
I just think that looking for the silver linings is important. I think right now we're at a time where, you know, everybody's stressed. Everybody's got a lot of chaos going on. It doesn't matter what profession you have. It doesn't matter what your family life is like. Everybody's got struggles right now. So I think looking for anything that's positive and trying to find some way to focus on those things and not get so caught up in the the stress and chaos of just everyday life is important.
We'll hear from more of you in a moment. But first, we want to bring in Zachary Alty. He's a licensed clinical social worker, life coach, psychotherapist, and a contributor to the online publication Psychology Today. He says being grateful for what you have can be the best way to help get you through the incredibly challenging times that we're facing. Zachary joins us from New York City. And let me say, Zachary, we're grateful to have you with us this morning.
Hi, Randall. Thanks for having me.
And you're in a comforter tent, very similar to one that I have at home. I'm watching you via Zoom, and I have that same setup in my office. Can you start by defining gratitude for us in your mind?
Sure. Yeah. So gratitude is really being aware of the good things in our life, right? We can choose to focus on the struggles or the things that are going well. And what we focus on really determines our perspective. And I think perspective really determines everything.
And how powerful of a tool is it for resilience in the face of, for instance, the COVID-19 pandemic?
It's tremendous. I mean, it affects not only mental health, but physical health and perhaps even immune health, which can make you physically perhaps more resistant to COVID. And it can make you a better support system for family members and others who are struggling at this time.
Can that be measured when someone, have they done, you know, clinical research that shows changes in body chemistry and such when feelings of gratitude are created?
Yeah, so there certainly is research on this. I reference some of it in my Psychology Today article, Gratitude in a Time of Pandemic. It was published in March.
Back when we were really being hit with it in the beginning.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so there is certainly research out there. Yes.
Where can people find gratitude? Is it easy? Like if you just take 2 seconds to think about it, or do you have to really search in times like these?
Certainly. It can certainly be a struggle. There's a few things that I think make that easier. If you're having trouble accessing gratitude, I think it can be helpful to expand your thinking. Thinking globally, historically, and biologically. So a couple examples of that are historically the World War II generation, right? People being away from loved ones for Thanksgiving, people passing, really difficult time in history. Things have been pretty good in recent history. So, you know, we're getting a little bit of a perspective shift now, but I think that's healthy periodically. Thinking globally, I mean, us here in the U.S. are really have a lot of access to clean drinking water, safe housing, things that are sort of taken for granted often, and having gratitude for those things can be helpful. And even biologically, I mean, when you think about humans are the only organism on this planet that don't have to worry about getting eaten while we sleep.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Zachary, can you feel grateful and sad at the same time?
Certainly, yeah. And sadness is a healthy emotion to feel. That's important to feel. There are going to be sad things. And gratitude isn't about ignoring sadness or ignoring things that are difficult, but it's about leveraging those strengths and really reminding ourselves of how much good there really still is, even when sad things happen.
Mm-hmm. Help us understand the difference between, say, finding gratitude, like you just talked about, and expressing gratitude.
Great question. So finding gratitude is an internal process. And expressing gratitude is something that you can do to make that more of an interpersonal process, sharing it with others. But I think gratitude really starts on the personal level. So gratitude isn't necessarily publishing a Facebook or Instagram post telling the world how grateful you are for something. It really starts with just sort of acknowledging that for yourself.
Mm-hmm. I want you to tell us why you think crises actually bring out the best in people. I think a lot of people want to hear that right now.
Certainly, yeah. So, you know, we have a baseline expectation of positive things, of happiness, things that bring us joy. And in challenging times, that baseline need is lowered, right? And that's healthy. That's a healthy, natural, cyclical process that happens. And as that baseline need is being lowered, it's difficult. It doesn't feel good. But it's a positive, refreshing process. I mean, think about how exciting it's going to be to go out to dinner when that's open up again, right? Think about how exciting it's going to be in someone's house that isn't a close family member. Or all of these things, I think, are going to be really, we're paying up front sort of with discomfort for these moments of joy in the future.
I was thinking about that. I was thinking about, you know, if these vaccines prove to be as effective as, you know, the trials are showing, we could be out of this in a relatively short period of time. And what will that world feel like? We will start appreciating things that we completely took for granted in the past.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's helpful to have hope for things like a vaccine, but let's say even worst case scenario, vaccine, you know, timeline is delayed. I think there's still things we can be grateful for. I think a lot of people have been struggling right now during the second wave, because I think there was a psychological expectation that this fall would be when things started to loosen up. Yeah. And so, I mean, a lot of people have been struggling right now in particular. And I think that this is really an acute time where we're really feeling the stress. I think it's important to remember that 2021 is just around the corner, right? And I've never been more excited for a New Year's.
All right. So to close things out here, Zachary, can you give us a few, you know, really simple steps that we all can take to find gratitude in our lives?
Yeah. So I think, you know, really thinking outside of your bubble is really helpful. They say in Alcoholics Anonymous, compare and despair. So if you're thinking about just the people in your circle or people on social media, I think it's really difficult to access gratitude. And when you think about all of the privileges, all of the things that we have, the safeties, the comforts, they're really so numerous that you can't run out of them. I mean, I like to encourage my clients to think of new things to be grateful for every day, because there are so many that focusing on just a few, I think, really does you a disservice.
Zachary Alte, I want to thank you for joining us with your expertise. And if you don't mind taking just a few seconds to tell us what you're grateful for, thankful for this year.
Yeah, grateful for so many things. I mean, family, career. I love what I do, and I'm very fortunate to still be employed right now. Really just fortunate to be an American, a New Yorker, and to have these deep conversations that I get to have in my work with people, and be trusted with making them better and making them happier. So just so much to be grateful for. I could take up the rest of the show.
Right.
But thank you so much for having me, Randall.
You bet. Zachary Alte, licensed clinical social worker, life coach, psychotherapist, and contributor to the online publication Psychology Today. Have a great rest of your day, Zachary. And before we get to our next guest, we want to share a few more responses from listeners about gratitude. Ariana S. says, I started writing in a journal back in mid-March, and I write in it almost every day. I can look back and see where there's been, you know, good times this year. And it's a habit I could never sustain before now, but I'm on month 9. Which is an additional thing I'm grateful for. Ed says, I usually spend long hours in the office, but due to COVID-19, I moved to working from home. And this was a gift because my beloved dog and best friend became very sick. And I was lucky enough to spend every hour by his side for the last 10 days of his life. For this, I will always be thankful. I love that. Chokes me up. And this short story from Tom Harrington, who lives in Sacramento. You'll like this one.
About three or four weeks ago, I proposed to my girlfriend. It wasn't the ideal proposal I had planned, but it ended up being just great. I did it in the apartment. So when she got home from work, I had a sign and some things. She loves Pixar and Up. And so I got some little Up things. And then right when she walked in the door, I proposed to her. Even though like 2020 has been crazy between COVID and all the other things, it's nice to find this upside to it. So it's been a good balance.
I would say so. Let's now hear from Dr. Shiva Zadeh. She's a school psychologist for the Sacramento City Unified School District and has her own practice. You can find her at pamperyourbrain.com. And she's a friend of the show. We've had her on before. Dr. Shiva, a lot of our listeners have commented about being grateful for having more time to do things like being with people, taking care of themselves and others. Another listener, Kimmy Brown, told us, "I'm grateful for this time with my spouse because they're both working from home, more time with my kids because they're home too, and more time for me, no 25-minute commute. We have grown closer to certain friends and let other friendships that weren't healthy perish." It may seem obvious, but why is this time factor so important to people?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It's nice to be back here. Yeah, you know, it's just a really great time to be with one another. And so many people have been telling me that they're grateful they don't have to rush off to places and that they can really try to be more present in the moment. And I often talk about this with my clients, but the fancy word for it is being mindful and having that mindful attitude, which is basically just being more present in the moment. And practicing gratitude along with mindfulness are actually really great for your mental health. Mm. And they've actually had studies that have shown that these are protective factors and they can have positive effects on our mental health.
Mm-hmm. It kicks in some sort of chemicals in your body, right?
That's right. Work
in your favor.
That's right. It can really be almost like a hack, you know, for boosting those chemicals in your brain.
Yeah. What about healing? You know, just time to heal, whether physically or we've all dealt with a lot emotionally this year.
Yes, that's really true. And, you know, that time factor is so crucial because, you know, a lot of times, we need that time to heal. We need that time to process what's happened. And your previous guest, Zachary, spoke about that with regard to allowing yourself to have both disappointment and allowing that space for it. And you can have days where you are both having disappointment and feeling happy. I mean, the range of emotions is endless, especially during this time, as we know.
Yeah. All right. One of your specialties. Okay. Let's talk about gratitude and kids. Is it important in your view that children know what gratitude is and how to express it?
Sure. I mean, we all want to raise children who are kind, responsible, successful, and loving. And teaching our children to practice gratitude is actually one of the best ways to foster those qualities. And it really allows our children to step outside of their own self-interest for a second. Mm-hmm. And again, like I mentioned, this can have really positive effects on even your own children's mental health.
As parents or some sort of role model in these kids' lives, how do you model gratitude for children?
You know, ultimately, this year, as we know, everything is really different. And one of the best things to do is, even if you yourself, as an adult, you're disappointed about what the holidays look like, I think actually a really good first step is not to just assume that your children are upset or disappointed. I think it's really important to ask your children how they're feeling, because you never know, maybe some children are actually relieved that they don't have to be surrounded by all the relatives that are pinching their cheeks and begging for kisses. And so
some of the adults too, possibly.
Yes, possibly too. So it's really nice actually to ask them what's going on. What do they think Thanksgiving should look like this year? You know, kind of asking them how they're feeling about things and then really going from there. And I do have some fun tips that I can talk about as well.
Yeah, go down those for us. Would this have to do with managing expectations?
Yeah, and so, you know, as I said, it's gonna look different this year with Thanksgiving. You may not be with the same family members that you're used to being with. And what you could do is maybe you could choose to celebrate virtually with loved ones. I mean, we've been doing school virtually and everything else virtually. So one thing you could do is starting today, start a gratitude journal with your child. And this can be with children that are even as young as the toddler age. You can have them draw a picture of something they're grateful for and challenge your child to be specific, because the more they pay attention to these details, the more they'll start to notice the positive things that are going on in their life. And you could even have your child write or draw Thanksgiving cards if your child is maybe sad about not getting to see certain family members or friends. And you could even send those cards out to those family members. Mm. I have another really fun idea where you make a gratitude bowl. And each time you think of something that you're grateful for, you just keep this bowl in a central location in your house and just have some slips of paper and a pencil and just jot down something you're grateful for, slip it in that bowl. And then during the Thanksgiving meal, you can each take turns reading it out loud. And
if you hit a moment where you're not, you know, you're hitting a bout of sadness or something, go into the bowl and start reading those to remind yourself, right?
Exactly. That's a really wonderful idea. And I actually think that one of the best things you can do to teach your child gratitude is actually by donating, giving back. Because when we give back to our community and we're showing that we're helping our community, it's really, truly a great way to foster that sense of giving and gratitude. And so something very simple you could do is donating to a local soup kitchen, homeless shelter, or even dropping off Thanksgiving care packages to perhaps the local fire station, things like that. And one other really fun idea I have is maybe you can have each family that you usually celebrate Thanksgiving with, have each family make the same matching centerpieces. And that allows everyone in the extended family to really feel a connection.
Yeah, we did that for my mom's birthday, not with centerpieces, but we all had the same dessert.
I love that.
For the dinner. Everyone, you know, ate whatever they wanted. But a friend of ours who lives up in Washington sent us in the mail all the same chocolate cake. And so
that's really impressive. Wonderful. And yeah. I was going to suggest that too. If you wanted to do a food item, you could do that as well. I think it's a great idea, Randall.
Yeah. Dr. Shiva Zadeh, we really appreciate you taking the time to share those tips. I know there's parents walking away with them right as we speak to use those. And do you mind giving us a little bit of what you're grateful for this year?
Oh, sure. I'm just really grateful for the extra time, you know, I got to be with my family and to spend that time because I have two little ones and we all know they grow up so quickly. So it's been a real blessing and I'm so grateful for that.
Oh, that's nice. Dr. Shiva, find her at pamperyourbrain.com. Also on Instagram. I follow her on Instagram. She got great stuff. Thank you, doctor.
Thank you.
Hey, here's one more note from one of our listeners. This one comes from Rebecca in Paradise. Rebecca says, I have always been thankful of my family, but during COVID, I'm astounded by the resiliency and strength of my young children and husband. And keep in mind, and she says it, we are still recovering from loss during the 2018 campfire. So if Rebecca and her family can find gratitude, I'm certain just about any of us can. Still ahead, let's all be grateful for some great music. Cap Radio's Nick Bruner joins us with a story of gratitude from a musician. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White, and we're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight here on Cap Radio, and our focus this hour is gratitude. For so many people, 2020 has been a difficult year, to say the least, one that could drive New Year's Eve to be the happiest holiday of all coming up, right? But with November comes Thanksgiving, and during this month especially, we try to think of things that we're grateful for. And to help meet the theme of gratitude with a musical twist, we welcome in Cap Radio Assistant Program Director and Modern Music Director, Nick Bruner. Always great to talk to you, Nick.
Hey, Randall, nice to be back. Thanks.
So, Nick, first question, what comes to mind for you as Cap Radio's music director when you think of gratitude?
When I think of gratitude, it's hard not to just come immediately back to the ability to do this job, you know, to be able to play music that otherwise you don't usually get to hear on the radio for people who are excited about discovering new things. And I don't know, it's like, that's a really professional way of looking at things. Like, you know, I try not to derive too much of my personality from my job, but at the same time, it's hard not to just be hit in the face in the best way with that every day, especially when the mail comes, you know?
Yeah. And when you're putting your music playlists together, are you thinking about how music can help display or evoke or cultivate those feelings of gratitude?
Not directly. I think that's a byproduct of so much of putting a playlist like what I do for Hey Listen together on a weekly basis. I think that, like, it's one of those things that I hear and I feel good about, maybe a particular transition, right? Or, I mean, just the way a particular song makes me feel or evokes certain feelings. So, yeah, I mean, it's not something that I look and seek out to make happen, but I do find that it's there still.
Yeah. So let's get to the music. What do you have for us today?
We're going to start with a clip from an as yet unreleased interview that I did with guitarist and just phenomenal artist, Khaki King. She released a new record this year, and we start with a little bit of her talking about what it was like to make it in the spring of 2020.
The story of making the record was the story of the unfolding of the pandemic. We finished the final track in lockdown. Despite all of our efforts over that period of time to change our behavior and to do the right thing, we basically passed COVID around the studio. Many of the song titles and the attitudes of the album, you know, eventually reflected the scariness. And I think a lot of what would happen during the day would be that we'd be recording, mixing, making sounds, listening, working on things. And then we'd take a break and we'd all check our phones and go, oh my God, oh my God. And so the album was almost our safe space during that time.
Interesting that you would describe the process of making that record as a safe space, as you also describe passing COVID around the studio as you made it.
what we thought we knew, we did not know. I just mean it was a mental safe space. Because the news was just it was very hard to understand. And plus, you know, you have to recall, music and performing arts was the first thing, really, to be canceled. We were all dealing with these sudden cancellations of work. While it wasn't clear if, you know, a restaurant was going to close down, it was very clear that a 1,000 capacity venue was not going to be holding performances. And I don't think we knew that what was happening to us at that point would really be happening to everyone, you know, in a matter of days.
Yeah, it happened so fast, and we still don't have those venues, but we still have those artists out there. One thing, Nick, that we can be so thankful for here in Sacramento is how we're surrounded by a lot of great local talent, many of whom are still creating music in this trying time. And what you have next for us has to do with that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This is probably the latest release from a local artist that had just floored me this year. There's so many good things that came out this year. Mediocre Cafe, a musician named Cooper Kofroth, makes music in Midtown. He put out one of my favorite records this year. Just a stellar new EP from Lillian Francis. Mahdi Bush doesn't seem to stop working ever. But what really got me last week was the new EP by Nate Curry. And this came out in October, but I just didn't cross my radar until last week, which I'm glad it did. I may be late to this party, but I'm glad I'm here. This track, the video for this is so colorful and so warm. And so, I don't know, it's exactly what I need, I think, as we go into the falls and the winter season. It's called Check Up On.
On each and every one of your family. Wasn't like that before I got older. When it come down to it, gotta show it, yeah. You don't know when it's finna gonna be your last day.
Nick, you're not privy to the window into the control room where I'm watching Antonio and Kyle dance to this music. You're right. It's very uplifting, and it is what we need right now. Nate Curry, right?
Nate Curry. Yeah, the range in his voice is so great. The production on the track is just, I love it. It just captivates me. And he's got such a stellar lineup of collaborators on the EP. Igwe Aka comes to mind. He's a guy who I found out about thanks to the NPR Tiny Desk contest this year. Or no, not this year, last year. Anyway, yeah, the EP is called Everything Should Be Fine. And there's a lot of ways you can interpret that. And the track, again, is a check up on.
Right. Okay, so as I understand it, your next piece you have for us, you played last week and you got two very different listener emails about it. Tell us about that.
Yeah. This is another thing that I really, again, this feels like one of the reasons I'm so grateful to work here and be able to do what I do is the interaction with people who, you know, resonate with the radio station, whether they love it, whether they hate it, passionate about music. I played this track coming out of an Iggy Pop song. We'll hear it in a second here, but I'm going to read some of the responses that I got over email. It starts off with Buzzkill Bruner following Lust for Life with whatever that was. I love you and your passion for music, but I'm afraid I can't marry you. Your penchant for vocalist in the wistfully whiny range. That's not that there's anything wrong with that. They write, no. All music is sacred. We just lead to the danger zone. Then they say, of course, they're playing with me here. They really like it. And then the next email I receive after that was just the subject says, Aldous Harding and Waxahachie. And the message just says, I was really happy to hear the above-mentioned artists on your show today. So the track is Aldous Harding. It's called The Barrel. And this came out of Lust for Life, which is this bombastic, you know, 1970s David Bowie-produced punk song from Iggy Pop. Well, I'll let you hear it. I'll see how you react. Again, this is The Barrel.
I feel your love. I feel time is up. When I was a child, I never knew enough what that do to me. The wave of love is a transient hug. The water's the shell and I saw a hand arch out of the barrel.
Okay, so that's my speed. I like that. But I also really like Lust for Life, but I can see the juxtaposition of those two might have been what jarred people.
Yeah, that listener was not wrong. I could have found maybe a more artful transition between those two pieces of music, but I still love it. The way the barrel builds and builds and builds and adds things to it, it becomes more playful. I love and I hate this segment, Randall, because I want to listen to the entire song every time that I'm doing it. I had this in mind. I have so many things to say about it. But yes, it also shows the range and the dynamism in the playlist, and the ability to be able to play with that every week is something that's just it's a lot of fun. So yeah, if you want to write me, please do. nick.bruner@capradio.org. You'll let me know what you think of the playlist. Love him, hate him.
It always hurts me, Nick, when I have to raise my hand and point to Antonio in the booth to bring the music down, because like you, I want to keep listening.
And now that we're on a video chat, I can actually see you wince as you do it, Randall. I can see the pain behind those glasses.
Right. You had one more clip set aside for us, but I don't think we're going to have time to get to it. But people can hear it, right, on your show this coming weekend?
Last week, in fact, you can go to capradio.org/heylisten, and you can find How Lucky with John Prine and Kurt Vile, which is a wonderful tune.
Excellent. Nick Bruner is Cap Radio Assistant Program Director and Modern Music Director. Nick, what are you grateful for?
Oh, man. There's so much good stuff this year, Randall. I mean, it's easy to dump on 2020, but interpersonally, my life is good. I've got nothing to complain about.
I love to hear that. Nick Bruner, thank you. We got a lot of great responses from all of you regarding what you're grateful for. So if you didn't hear yours on the air today, we're working to include those on the website at capradio.org/insight. And a quick programming note, Insight is off next week. So in its place, Cap Radio is airing Here and Now each day, except Thanksgiving Day. We'll air a special called The Splendid Tables Turkey Confidential. Kyle McKinnon is our producer. Kyle, your thoughts?
I am here, Randall, and I am thankful for my family, my health, my job, And most of all, the Insight team. Aww. Love all you guys so much. Just thankful every day to walk in and work with you guys. So very thankful.
Our digital, thank you, Kyle. Our digital team, Chris Hagen, Emily Zentner, Helga Salinas, and Megan Minotta. Technical director, Mark Jones. Our engineer is Antonio Muniz. Antonio, step up to the mic.
Hey, Randall. What I'm grateful for is my health and my family and just being able to hang out with you guys and provide community with news and facts.
Aww. Insight's managing editors, Aram Sarkissian. Joe Barr is Cap Radio's chief content officer. Hey, thanks for joining us. Have a great, healthy, socially distanced holiday week. I'm Randall White, and I am grateful for you, our Cap Radio listeners and members, and to be a part of this amazing team that we all just mentioned. And for my two dogs who turned 16 today, still healthy. Happy birthday, Florcita and Gigi. It may be 2020, but you can still count your blessings.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.